I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Chair, I would move that we approve the accounts payable. That would be the accounts payable for cycle date 9-9 through 9-13. And that would be in the amount of $765,440.73. The payroll checks, warrants, same cycle date, 9-9 through 9-13. Both the payroll checks as well as the withholdings and payments out to other entities. Total there is $734,808.16. Total warrants approved, $1,500,248.89. Noting the county manager, staff, and has reviewed and approved such.
Second. Other discussion? Items of note?
I've got a short list, Jim. The starting with the top Avtech Electronics payment of $8,120.68 out of the motor pool for light bar installation for Tahoe related to the jail, to the detention. Eagle County Road and Bridge payment of $21,981.47 out of the Public Works Administration budget for winter maintenance of County Roads 1, 2, 4, and 4A. Hayden Heritage Center payment of $4,328.50 out of the museum fund, 50% cost of for repair of the Hayden Depot roof. I've got a couple payments.
Say what? That was part of the museum and heritage fund?
Yep.
Okay.
That was a specific project.
Yep. Grant. Yep.
So Hayden, two payments to Hayden School District, RE1. First is for $6,514. This is out of the unearned revenue item, and this is for the capital projects identified by the school district out of the fee in lieu, essentially. And I've got three of those, as you might guess, RE1, 2, and 3.
That we approved through an agenda item?
Yep.
And so those are all been paid out.
These are the payments for those.
Yep.
So that was $6,514 for the Hayden School District. Second payment for Hayden School District was $17,697.15. This is out of the Public Works other liabilities budget. This is 2019 payment for Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act. This is essentially distribution of Forest Service receipts. So I've got a couple of those as well for other districts. For South Round School District, RE3, I've got a payment of $23,327 for the fee in lieu as well. Also for South Round School District, a payment of $14,070.57 for the Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act. It's a mouthful. I'm sure there's an acronym. Payment to Redmond Brothers, $6,821.23 for gravel on County Road 11. Payments, I have three payments to the City of Steamboat Springs. First is $32,585.64 for Regional Building Department, August 2019 Building Department activities. This is just a transfer for PayPal. Payments in the city for $35,000 for out of the month multimodal transportation for the 2019 regional bus, and then payments of the city for $128,547.04 general fund motor vehicles. This is for August 2019 motor vehicle payments, license fees, and taxes. The payment to the Steamboat Schools, so RE2, $108,797.42. This is for Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act. I think you had delayed their payment for fee in lieu, so there's not a payment in this cycle for that purpose. Just because there were two, just noting that, two for the others. Stinton Enterprises Incorporated, $10,000 out of the Taylor Grazing Range Improvements budget for spraying leafy spurge on a 100-acre parcel. And then final payment was Castle Rock Microwave, $59,326 out of the communications pool for capital. This is for design and installation of microwave hops between Mount Werner and the Communications Center and Emerald Mountain and the Communications Center.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Our work session yesterday, we had an update from the deputy county manager and from legal, and we had budget presentations from Road and Bridge, the coroner, CSU Extension, Environmental Health, and Accounting.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the consent agenda items, and that would be a consent agenda items A and B.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. This is Doug Monger.
Good morning.
And
nice to meet you.
Dan Weinheimer is our deputy county manager. We have a third commissioner who's not here today. He's had shoulder surgery, so he's having follow-up. If you'd introduce yourself for the record and then go ahead.
Okay. My name is Emmy Cooper, and I'm a junior at the high school. And one thing that we are doing this Friday, specifically for the part of the Fridays for Future Movement, is we are participating in a school strike in advance of the the United Nations Climate Summit. And so we will be at the courthouse from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. during school. And it's part of a global strike, so people all around the world will be striking during school hours to call attention to the climate crisis and to urge leaders to take action. And so as we are participating in that at our local high school, it's just also an urge for local leaders to participate in climate action.
What will you be doing from 10 to 1?
We will be striking. We will be registering people to vote. We will be eating lunch and making signs and just having a fun time on a strike.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yep. Very good.
And here's this if you guys want to.
Thank you.
Oh, we have the two presentations from the state then too?
No, we're not having presentations from the state.
Those were just included.
Provided those as information for you guys to review.
Okay.
If we have questions about those, can we ask you?
Absolutely. Okay. And I might not be able to answer them all.
Okay.
I think that it might be a good idea to have a representative from the city come up, Winnie, and maybe YBSC also.
Can I have two from the city?
Sure.
Council member here and
YBSC.
Okay. I just prefer to have my elected official.
Bring the whole circus.
The whole show.
We might want another.
Because this is going to be.
We can use Tim's.
Potentially a collaborative effort.
Okay,
that would work together.
Okay,
that sounds great.
Where's Mr. Corrigan? He is having a follow-up in bail for his shoulder surgery. He'll be back this afternoon, though.
Okay, are we ready to begin?
I think so. If you guys all would introduce yourselves, just for Deanna's sake and for the record, that would be great. Will you start, Winnie?
Yeah, Winnie Della Quadri, assistant to the city manager for the city of Steamboat Springs.
Sonia Macy, Steamboat Springs city council member.
Scott Kalman, Rock County Environmental Health.
Sarah Jones, Yampa Valley Sustainability Council.
Scott Connor, Yampa Valley Sustainability Council.
Thanks. I imagine you're running the show here, Scott.
Yes, I will be leading this meeting. And so I guess I'll begin.
Yeah, just go ahead and get started.
Yeah, so the request here is just to get some direction from the board for future climate action and resiliency planning efforts. Recommended action, you know, we're just going to discuss some of the alignment with strategic planning objectives, core services, public health. Unfortunately, Carrie Ladro couldn't be here today. State goals and just trying to get some direction from you guys going forward. As you know, we are currently working on a greenhouse gas inventory in partnership with the city, and we expect that to be completed, I think, probably mid-October.
In the meantime, you know, it'd be a good idea for somebody to get the old one back to us as well.
Okay.
For review.
I think that I have it posted on my website.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that's I will.
If you want to just email it as a reminder to us, yeah. That would be great. Thanks.
2005. So one of the goals of the new inventory was to be able to take that 2005 information and compare it to 2018. And there's a little extra work that we asked them to do to recalculate some of the numbers they did in 2005 so it better aligns with how they did the 2018 report.
So who's we then? Is we the Sustainability Council through the group or
yeah.
what?
So we have...
you guys are kind of championing that cause this time.
We are the fiscal agent for it and are putting in $20,000 and the county is putting in five.
So who...
But there is a steering committee that's directing, that's working with the consultant. So I'm assuming when Scott says we, he's referring to the steering committee and not necessarily the city.
That's correct.
So are there minutes for those meetings?
I don't think there's minutes. There's some notes.
Be a good idea for you guys to spread them around.
The consultant does provide updates, so we have
right, and I have
which update. We haven't seen them either. So
you have seen one of the updates,
okay?
But I'll make sure that you have them all.
Okay.
Thank you. All right.
At least one. The next logical step after completing a greenhouse gas inventory is to start looking at climate action. Why do we do that? Because of potential economic and health impacts to the citizens of the county. There's also a lot of alignment with county strategic planning, including our environmental services management team objectives, core environmental health services, public health services, public health improvement planning, and also state legislation and goals. So things are lining up pretty well in terms of the resources that are going to be available from the state, including funding. One thing that, you know, we need to consider as we start to work through this process is climate action versus climate resiliency. There's a lot of resiliency projects going on right now, and it seems like it would be a good idea to try to synthesize those efforts or have a central location on that information. We prevent overlap, try to improve collaboration on those types of projects, identify common needs, and try to find some efficiencies. So I listed on my notes here just some of the resiliency efforts that are going on right now. Winnie told me about one recently, a study or planning effort with the Chamber on resiliency planning for tourism. There's connections with the Hazard Mitigation Plan. You know about VCAPs, Yampa River Management Plan, Public Health Improvement Plan, zoning regulations, master plan, upcoming master plan updates or comprehensive plan development, waste diversion strategic plan, some of the things that are going on with the river, including the nutrient study, Fish Creek Watershed Protection Plan, Yampa River Management Plan. So you get the idea. There's probably more that I haven't thought of.
So your suggestion in relation to those is to kind of catalog those efforts as a part of this.
Yeah, and try to improve collaboration on those things. I think that there's some common needs. And so I think that the city and county could communicate better on some of the things they're trying to do. And, you know, I think it would be smart for us to try to get together on a regular basis. I don't know who that is, and just communicate.
Kelly
and me. Yeah. And so I think that's something we should do.
We can do that.
And I try to meet with Kelly and it's sporadic, but I, you know, so yeah. I think that would be great.
Kelly is really the water person, and then I'm the other.
Everything else.
So it's bad enough on the water thing, and then you add all the other stuff to it. Yeah. The water thing, we still have the overlapping things on all the sides.
Yeah.
And again, that's been my concern all along, too. We got a whole bunch of people working on the same effort, asking for money to figure out how we can do the same thing. So we don't figure out how we can align people to do whatever they're going to do, and we're not overlapping on the rest. So
yeah, I think that's an important part. And I don't know, maybe that's separate from the Climate Action Plan. Maybe because of this, because of this greenhouse gas inventory, we identify some gaps with resiliency, and it's a planning and resiliency. But we'll have to figure that out through discussions as we move forward. So basically, I just kind of, you know, thought ahead to, you know, what's the proposed action or what do we need to do? We're having this public meeting, which is step one. We talked about budgeting a little bit. We need to, you know, identify a project lead, or is the city county co-lead, or who's the fiscal agent if we are looking for grant money and if we're going to hire a consultant. So those are conversations that we'll have to have. We want to identify stakeholders and potentially other funding partners, such as the ski area, potentially.
Yes, Sarah.
We're going to, you know, examine the updated greenhouse gas inventory. Of course, we'll report back to City Council and to the board on findings. And through that, we want to identify gaps in action and resiliency. Eventually, develop a scope of work for some consulting services based on those gaps. We want to identify some benchmarks. You know, Doug, you mentioned yesterday, we don't want a plan that sits on the shelf that doesn't have any measurable outcomes. We want to make sure that any plan does have measurable
outcomes.
Some
things that we can actually do.
Yeah.
Even if they're little baby steps.
Yep. And I would agree 100% with that. Eventually, we'll put out a bid, receive cost estimates. We need to work on securing some funding. I know that there's DOLA money available. Winnie, I don't know.
There is.
If you know more about that.
Yeah, there is. We can get money. But we need to know that the county's at the table and whether or not, I mean, we're doing, the city's the fiscal agent for the greenhouse gas study. Would the county be willing to be the fiscal agent for the climate action plan? Trading off.
I think something to think about.
So it's really...
we haven't discussed really if we want to continue in that role or not.
Well, I think right now, I think we need to see the greenhouse gas study, too, and I need to re-familiarize myself with the greenhouse gas study, too. I want to know whether we're getting credit for all the 400,000 people that we provide power for Hayden Power Station, and that all goes into our inventory, or whether that's a gift to the whole world here. So, you know, I guess some of those things and how much we are directly responsible for, and how much effect we can have on that in a whole perspective. So I'm good.
It's a good question.
Those further discussions.
Let me jump in on the greenhouse gas emissions study. I mean, I think, you know, Doug, we've been talking about this for a long time, you know, emissions and where can we have the most impact. And we've been both going to the same meetings in Tri-State where, you know, for many years it was just we're going to stop the coal plants from shutting down and that's how we're going to deal with this. And, you know, we're in a very different time right now. Our governor has stomped the gas pedal of really looking at emissions reduction. I think Scott articulated pretty well that we have all of this alignment. You know, and he had John Putnam from the state here last week talking a little bit about what is the state doing and how's that effort going to dovetail to what we're doing. So I kind of wanted to just mention, I mean, as you guys know, I've been kind of advocating for increased energy efficiency and renewable energy for a long time, and the greenhouse gas emission study is a great basis for this. So just to kind of give you some high level, like what does this tell us and what could we learn moving forward, I just pulled a couple of the graphs. And I mean, basically the bottom line is that, you know, we looked at this is the 2005 baseline. I mean, what we found out was that buildings were the primary issue. You know, 57% of our greenhouse gas emission studies are coming from buildings. So, you know, when you think about what has happened since that study has taken place and what's happened now, I think both the city and the county have committed to keeping our building codes more current and staying more up to date, and also have done some good leading by example in terms of designing our own building with the CLAT. So I feel good about, you know, there are some steps that we have made, whether it's directly because, you know, some of us saw this and went, you know, we really got to knuckle down on this, or whether it's because it's just the right thing to do. But the point is, if you look at this, the buildings being, you know, 57%, and then you look at the next sector as transportation and vehicles, and, you know, going back to the buildings, you know, what is it about the buildings that is basically causing such emissions? And if you look at this pie, the blue is electricity, right? So that's a giant slice of what's going on with our greenhouse gas emissions as of then. I will be curious to see, you know, how the changes we've made to our codes and building change this, and if they do. But I think what we're going to see still is that electricity is still the number one user.
Well, the percentages can't change. I mean, we don't have any increased gas coming in here, so got to heat somewhere.
Right, right.
So we don't have any more gas capacity.
Right. So when you think about electricity, I mean, the bottom line is that if we need to, I mean, obviously, if this
it might be less, but the graph is probably the same.
The graph would be the same, and it might be less. And so the question is, what's the source of this? I mean, is this clean electricity? You know, and then layer on this piece, which is the vehicles. And, you know, 15% back then was our vehicle use. And, you know, this giant piece of the vehicle use is obviously gasoline, right? There's some diesel in there and whatever. Well, I mean, the move is beneficial electrification. Electric vehicles are basically the direction that we need to be moving if we want to make a significant impact in this transportation question. So, you know, I just bring these as by way of example of, you know, what are some of the things that we may see and what are some of the things we saw in the past that we could respond to. And, you know, again, it doesn't make any actual difference to move to electric vehicles if we're going to continue to fuel them with power sources that are less clean than they possibly could be. So
has anybody checked with YPEA to see about the capacity coming into the town? I mean, we just built, we allowed the new line to come into Steamboat Springs 7 years ago.
I have not chatted with Steve about the capacity, but I have been chatting with him specifically about the electric vehicles. It is something that YBEA is very interested in supporting and developing infrastructure for. And in regards to that, I also met last week with representatives from the state who are interested in having communities do EV infrastructure planning and EV readiness planning. They've specifically invited us, I mean, they really encouraged us to do that. And the question is, you know, it's like in addition to a climate action plan, is the county at all willing to look at EV readiness in the different communities, knowing that YBEA is very strongly on board with that piece of it?
Yeah, let me.
I love how they don't pay any gas taxes.
I know, it's an issue. that's the flip side of it.
Absolutely.
So I want to focus us a little bit because we have just about 15 minutes left for our conversation today. No, it's okay. You're totally fine. I think, you know, we're kind of getting into what might be in a climate action plan without maybe answering the primary questions first. And I think our purpose today is to give some direction to our staff around what the county's participation is going to be here.
Right.
So, you know, the first question which Winnie asked is, you know, is the county willing to be at the table in a climate action planning effort? Doug?
You lead off with me.
I
think we need to be there. I always believe in best management practices.
Perfect.
And best things to do. So I, you know, at the same point in time, I've been advocating, lobbying for my coal-fired power plant down Valley. So I'm not interested in throwing the town of Hayden and the Hayden School District under the bus. 58% of their revenue is coming from the Hayden power plant. $6.5 million out of the Hayden power station. So, you know, we got a huge transition thing here, and I don't want to get the cart in front of the horse here to figure out how we're going to solve all these things without knowing. And we talk about public health, and I appreciate the public health, but how much public health is out there when people are unemployed and not having things to do and not having jobs in my community in Moffat County that are still commuting back and forth from here to Steamboat, and so from Steamboat to Craig and the rest, and our employment base and the rest. And again, I'm all for the future to move forward, and you know, and I don't know that we need to take baby steps. I just want to take intelligent steps and not step on our toes and do stupid things, whatever they might be, trying to get to the ultimate objective and then run over people and things as we go that way. So that's kind of I'm definitely on board. And again, I'm not. I believe all the time in the best management practices that we can do, and however that means. Sonia, you had brought up the concept of the question about the charging station at the airport, and then I thought about it some more, and I was rude in my comment, but more I thought about it, and I read Eagle Vale's plan as well. Their objective is to get people in the buses. That's what we really want to do. We don't want anybody driving our cars.
Mm-hmm.
So we want them in the buses. We want us, and that's probably all of our transit as much as we can, carpooling and sharing and the rest. So, I mean, that's all. So I'll be quiet.
thanks, Doug. I think we can. I appreciate that, and I think there's no question that we should participate in this. I think there have been... the difficulty in talking about climate action historically has been the coal-fired, the Hayden Station and the conversations related to that. And I think things have shifted pretty significantly very quickly. And mm-hmm. so it's just a lot different conversation than it would have been even 2 years ago, 1 year ago. And so I think we absolutely should be at the table in this conversation and be a leader in these efforts. And I would agree with Doug on a lot of things. I mean, I think we don't want to just pay lip service to the concept. I mean, I think...
No, I don't want to plan. They're just kind of...
Yeah, like...
got enough of them out there.
Absolutely. And so identifying what those things are, there's no question that anything we do locally really is just a drop in the bucket in the big scheme of things. And so there's a part of it that's just symbolic, right? We're willing to participate. We are committed to this effort. And so identifying those things that we really can do that really will make a difference. And I have to say that that's been my sense of it, that it's just a drop in the bucket. But looking at the plans that Scott shared with us from Summit County, Utah, I believe.
Which is remarkably similar to Rackham.
Okay. From Eagle County, from Aspen, and starting to look at those. And it is, to me, a little bit inspirational to see each of these communities saying, well, we can reduce our emissions by 25%, by 50%, by 80%, and then you think about the cumulative effects of that. But it feels hard when there are other players that are not participating on a bigger scale. So I think to echo Doug's sentiment about whatever we can do locally, we should demonstrate a commitment to doing, and we don't want it to just be lip service. It really should be things that are impactful. So I think that answers the question about whether the county's at the table. As far as being the fiscal agent, I don't see why we couldn't be.
Could I jump in on one question, too, related to this, like how we might want to walk this out? Because I think that Kathy Meyer actually has been partnering with me on the city council on this particular end, and I think she was confused about the meeting time, but she intended to be here.
That's my fault.
And so I just wanted to make sure, like, from where we sit, like, how do we walk this out perspective? I think... we've talked about getting the results from the greenhouse gas emission study, hopefully getting the DOLA grant that everybody worked very hard on, and thank you for your contribution to that. And that process being a real vehicle for these discussions. And so, as far as fiscal agent questions, I don't know if we need to answer that today.
It would be nice to know if the county was willing, just because we are the fiscal agent for the solar planning one,
mm-hmm.
and we're the fiscal agent for the greenhouse gas one, and so...
So the solar planning, including Moffitt, Craig, and...
Yes.
You guys are going to be the fiscal agent for this?
Yes.
I don't know, that whole thing, you didn't do it, but the whole thing's a mess.
Well, there are two different grants going on.
Typical.
Well, no, because we were told by DOLA to split them. So one is one is more of a solar utility project that Peter has been talking about for quite some time. And Craig is the fiscal agent for that one. The other one is looking at site-specific solar and net metering at all sorts of different municipal and county buildings, including the Hayden Airport, and that's the one that the city of Steamboat Springs is the fiscal agent.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Yeah.
So I want to keep I want to keep us focused a little bit here. So I think that I would say the county is willing to be the fiscal agent if that's the question. I don't, I mean, and I think, I would think of this kind of stakeholder group would determine whether that makes sense or whether there's some other entity that makes more sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, on the surface, it makes sense.
Yeah.
It's a matter of fairness.
Right.
In working with the city, you know.
So we need a, and again,
yep,
so that creates that committee or something, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, that, and I think, so I would volunteer, since I'm the naysayer, so I would volunteer to keep things, you know, it's perspective too, to be, to sit, but I think we need to have a committee, and I assume that Sonia mm-hmm. And Kathy would be sitting on that, and
mm-hmm.
I could
mm-hmm.
sit on that and be part of this committee that... I need another meeting to go to. I'm slack.
You're feeling
yeah.
short on meetings.
Short,
yeah.
So.
Well, now that Hayes is over
could help.
And the wedding's
yeah,
over,
the wedding
Doug
over.
Doesn't have anything
exactly.
to do. So I assume then really next steps on that are working on who's on kind of a committee for this, who's going to lead that and head that up. And what the funding plan will be, because
well,
obviously there
scope
is
of work
yeah
in the budget
right a scope of work in the budget.
There you go.
Good with that. And I did want to ask you what you know about DOLA funding. So is there just looking at
and
some
what
of the
pot of money?
Yeah, that's my question. Is
so
I mean, is it,
there's technical assistance dollars that we could go after, which is 50-50. You could get $25,000
right.
for that, match it with $25,000. They're also beginning to roll out some specific climate funding sources,
yeah.
specifically because of the governor's goals.
Mm-hmm.
Through traditional methods, there's funding. Through newer methods, I believe there's also going to be some funding, if not now, in the very near future.
That was really my question, is if there's dedicated funding for this or if it's out of the EIAF pot or...
Well, they already have a pot called technical assistance.
Which is separate.
Which
so,
is not part of the $10 million
no.
or $12 million
no.
solar
no.
initiative.
Correct.
Right, good.
Yeah, so there's at least the technical assistance funding pot. I believe there's going to be some other...
Except
climate...
Potentially SEP funding.
Yeah,
I don't know what that is.
Supplemental environmental.
Oh, yeah,
it's another
SEP.
State.
It's another state program.
That's fine funding, though.
And you heard that from the consultants that you had present to you last week.
State representatives.
Yeah,
but we don't have as much SEP as fine
yeah.
funding. You know, it's for people who violate
yeah. Right.
environmental regulations within a certain county. And you can put little projects.
Well, why don't we have enough of those?
So,
that was a joke.
Exactly. So we don't, you know, I mean, while there may be money available, actually, I mean, when I was at the nonprofit, we had projects in the SEP funding file folder for a decade, and they never got funded because we didn't have nearly enough polluters.
Right.
Which
and
is
that
a
may
good
be,
thing. Is a good thing.
Maybe
right.
more appropriate for maybe an action step that we need to follow.
Correct.
That's the committee.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
But suffice it to say, there is the DOLA technical assistance dollars.
Okay.
And those have no set deadline. It's just a rolling application process, and that's just a letter with a scope of work to grade.
So then on top of that, so then, again, so the city and county would be interested in doing that. We would ask some of the partners to assist us with that as well, including YVEA, Town of Hayden, Oak Creek, and Yampa, and other interested parties.
Skeet, maybe CMC.
Yeah.
CMC, I have a list.
Yeah, there's
that I've
okay.
already, so
yeah.
We can talk about
well,
that.
I think
Sarah will write a check personally.
Sure.
No, I'm
just getting paid
so
now.
Budget,
she can.
Yeah,
budgeting,
I think that all sounds good.
Budgeting is a little problematic
because
we discussed yesterday because we really don't have a good number. So then we got to decide if we want to put a placeholder.
I think you
or
need to
do
make,
we do supplemental?
I think you probably need to make your best estimate about what the project will cost as a whole, and that needs to be the expenses part, and then identify how much money you're planning on generating in revenue, whether it's from grants or
right.
other partners
have,
or whatever, to offset
have,
that.
Okay, so
that does
to do
assume that?
That
you guys are the fiscal agent. Just
if,
so you know.
If we're, yeah, absolutely. Which we had a budget presentation.
We're all right.
Yeah, we're fine with that. But Scott had a placeholder in his budget yesterday, and that it was a little bit messy. So,
yeah, could feel
but
well.
I think just the best. Guess about or
and
best
again,
estimate
I'm,
about
I'm personally
cost,
not
right?
opposed to going supplemental thing too, and, you know, and it, and then coming out of reserves in the last at a later point in time. I realize that it's a better planning document to have it in the budget when you accept it, and the rest that you're planning on doing that. But I think if you have the placeholder in there, you know, it's a $20,000 revenue, $40,000 expense, or something like that.
we'll figure out how we can get by this.
Yeah.
Is that something
yeah.
we're thinking?
Yeah, I think so that's it's
is that good. What we think the project is?
But
I mean, again, consultants, I'm really worried about them.
So the way
keeping a rein on them.
Yeah, the way we did it at the city is we budgeted what our contribution was going to be. And then we did a supplemental to recognize the county revenue and then expand our budget line item to do that, just so that it was really clear that there were a partner, who the partners were, and as it came through the process. And that was, I mean, you can
yeah.
clearly
yeah.
say, here's how much money we're willing to put into it.
I think
so. I'll put a placeholder,
yeah.
$20,000.
You think the first way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's put in the baseline at $20,000. For the revenue or something like that, and $40,000 for the expense of it.
If you budget GOCO dollars, you can assume $25,000 from GOCO. Not GOCO, DOLA.
DOLA.
Sorry, I've been working on GOCO grants this morning. DOLA, that grant is $25,000, matched by $25,000.
So could I just ask a clarifying question? I'll report out to the city this evening that you guys are, A, interested in being at the table and that you're willing to step up and participate. If that's
I'm absolutely willing to participate as well. I mean,
sure. And that
I'm
also,
sure Tim is too.
Yeah.
None of us have enough meetings to attend.
Okay, perfect. And that you are willing to be the fiscal agent. And then the second, or the last question I would have is just, you know, I'm assuming that, and our council has kind of been assuming that we're going to follow that sequence of get the greenhouse gas emissions study, digest that, get the goal of DOLA grant, hopefully. I mean, we should know in November. I believe that
if it's eligible to be funded, it's not a competitive one.
Right. So basically get the DOLA grant and springboard into a process with that. So I guess my question is, just to be clear, are we talking about developing a climate action plan potentially through that DOLA grant process? Or are we talking about creating a parallel process in which we want to have kind of discussions beyond that DOLA grant?
I don't know enough about the DOLA grant to answer your question.
Too.
Yeah.
I'm confused on your question.
I guess what I'm so the DOLA grant is kind of a planning grant, so there will be
correct.
Some necessary level of participation from the different stakeholders because there's going to be action required that stakeholders will potentially take. So the idea is to kind of get, we have Route Moffitt, Craig.
So that's the solar plant that's
yes.
totally separate from this.
Yeah,
okay,
we're not going to commit
totally
to
separate.
Any action items that come out of the plan without knowing what the action
okay.
items are.
So we are wanting them to develop a climate action planning process that we as county and city will lead together, you as the fiscal agent, and we will figure out who we need to have at the table.
Right.
Is that what we're
that sounds
yeah. so there
okay,
would
correct.
Be a
perfect
steering
to
committee.
Okay.
The steering committee would work on a scope of work, and we would get some budget estimates. Then the partners would identify
mm-hmm.
where the funding is coming from. We would apply for a DOLA grant with the goal of maybe
mm-hmm.
starting in January.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that committee we talked about putting together a budget and
correct.
A scope of work.
Yep.
Yep.
January is a little aggressive, especially if we have to go through an RFP process.
No, I'm saying starting in January, meaning we would start the RFP process. We would release an RFP. It would be, meaning the money is available in January. So hopefully we would have a DOLA grant in agreement in hand by January, meaning we could do the RFP and start the process.
And hopefully we would have all of this done at a point next year where if we want to talk about budgeting in 2021 that we have
for
a solid
action items or okay
by July 2020
yeah right
it's aggressive
so we'll see
okay so we are it sounds like we have what we need for today. Is there anything else?
I do
this.
City of Steamboat Springs is doing a bag ban. Will be implemented October 1. You can no longer
those are so cute.
Get plastic single-use carry-out bags as of October 1 at your four large markets. Other stores might opt in. As a call to action, we have developed reusable bags that we are giving away to residents in all of our communities. So I brought one for each of you.
Are they only for the people who live in Steamboat?
No, they're not. They're
well,
not. We are actually doing it throughout the campaign. So
you choose first. You guys can choose. I'll take one.
I'll pass.
You don't need a bag.
I already use recycle bags. Yeah, I've
all right.
I already reuse the cloth bags.
So one other
Catherine's
thing.
We'll
got a hold
one
of me
to,
before.
One other thing, really quick.
Okay. Thanks.
Is we have this climate action planning budget from YBSC, and I guess we sort of answered the question by what we're going to do how we're going to move forward with the budget.
On the climate action or the
climate action plan.
Plan, yeah.
Yeah. And one of the line items here was lead climate action planning steering committee. But I guess we'll sort that out in our stakeholder meeting.
I think you need to sort it out in the stakeholder meeting rather than
that
try to hash
that out
right
this
minute.
Part of your deal, part of the process, being the fiscal agent as well, not having $7,000. Sorry,
yeah.
you might have just inherited that.
Yeah.
Well, this is very exciting. I just want to thank you guys. I was in D.C. last week in 14 congressional offices over 7 days, and I can assure you that there are people beyond just you who are concerned about the communities that coal is going to be a lesser part of. And it's a pretty big discussion that's being had, I mean, all over at all levels. And so anyway, you know, it was exciting also to go to the youth climate strike with Greta from Sweden, who has inspired some other youth. And I just wanted to mention that a few of them are here. I'm sure they
we're going to take some public comment. Yep.
Yeah.
And there's also the just transition from coal-based electrical energy economy. That's House Bill 1913.
I accidentally volunteered myself to be on that committee, so
great.
You have that.
Okay.
That's good.
All right, so thank you. We're going to go ahead and take some public comment. Thank you all for your time on that. So if you would like to make comment, we'll have you step up to the podium over here, and we'll try to keep it under 3 minutes so that we can move on to our next agenda item. So please step up. You can do it.
It's all right.
So just go ahead and introduce yourself, and then go ahead.
All right. Hi, I'm Morgan Graham. I'm a junior at SSHS. And today I want to ask you guys, and I know that I just saw you guys like kind of discuss what you guys are planning to do for this climate action plan, but I know this is like for the future, but for us, me and Emmy here are part of the Fridays for Future School Strike for Climate movement. And some of the goals that we want you guys to take on a county level is to invest in renewable energy infrastructure because it dramatically reduces our greenhouse gases produced by fossil fuel energy sources. We also would like for you guys to fund a composting program because in the city of Steamboat, we don't have we don't have a countywide composting program. And when food waste goes to landfills, it produces a lot of greenhouse gases, specifically methane. And when this food is composted in an aerobic environment, it doesn't produce that methane and reduces our greenhouse gas emissions. And also, like you said in the previous study that was done, over half of our greenhouse gas emissions are to power our buildings. And one way we can change that is to either construct or upgrade buildings to be at a higher sustainability standard. And one thing that you guys mentioned was that we do want to take action to help this crisis, but we also don't want to, you know, have the town of Hayden lose over half of its revenue by shutting down the coal-fired plant. And one of the things that Fridays for Future is really strong about is climate equity and the idea that those who can afford to make these changes should do it so that those who, you know, would lose over half of their revenue or all of their livelihoods by making these changes can continue to work towards those sustainability goals. But instead of making drastic changes right at that moment to kind of be like, oh, well, you can still operate this coal-fired power plant because it's part of your livelihood, but then over a longer period of time make transitions to more sustainable options. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Emmy Cooper. I'm also a junior at Steamboat Springs High School, and we took the time out of our school day to come down here and listen to this meeting and make our voices heard because we truly believe that climate action is more important than our education right now. And you guys are all sitting here at this table discussing our future and what my generation is going to grow up with. And I wonder if my generation is going to grow up with the right to have the long ski season that we have, with the right to clean air. Like, are my kids and my grandkids going to have those rights that I was afforded when I grow up? And when we're determining that, it really comes down to what actions you guys take right now and what actions you take in the near future. Because we've reached the point where we need to take action now to make the differences that we need to make to have the just future for my generation. And so I would really like you, as you have these future meetings and future discussions, to keep in mind my generation and my kids' generations, because we are not old enough to like get as involved in politics as you guys are. But I assure you that at our school, within our community, like in Eco Club, there's huge support for climate action and taking aggressive action to combat climate change. And so I thank you for your support and encourage you to take comprehensive action against climate change.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Is anyone else here for public comment? All right. Thank you very much. Are you handing this to me?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, yeah, we have this.
Oh, you have it?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I didn't bring anything up. I was worried about it coming.
It's not a joke.
No, it's not a joke. But what are people really willing to do to change their lives?
All right.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
We're here today to ask for authorization and approval of an additional agricultural access to two different lots on County Road 18. The recommended action is a motion for the board of the county commissioner's chair to approve an additional agricultural access of County Road 18 for lots 37 and 39 in the Catamount subdivision exemption. And June 2019, we were approached by Mr. John Holloway requesting access to two different lots off of County Road 18. Because, and this is for agricultural purposes, to be able to get in the two lots and hay those lots. Currently, he has been accessing those two lots from private roads on Catamount, and he would like access to, from County Road 18. Mr. Holloway was instructed to attend public comment to open discussion with the commissioners to allow the additional accesses to lots because of planning regulations which allow only one access per buildable lot. So in order for him to be able to have another access, it will have to go through the board as an approval item. We have been on site. We see no real issue allowing these extra accesses. There's one proposed entry that we may have to relocate because of the visibility. But besides that, I think the two accesses for hay and haying equipment would be fine.
So we kind of talked about it just a little bit. Are we all right?
Yeah, you're okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Question. Go ahead. So, and we kind of talked about this in a little bit in work session. So I guess I got a whole bunch of questions. So
yeah.
There is a pretty good little barrow ditch out there too, I assume.
There is, yes. There's a pretty good
It's not like you can drive right off the road and haul your horse, haul your flatbed trailer off this thing.
No.
And it has to, we're going to have to at least put in an 18,
yes.
18 foot culvert. My
right.
Second question, just promptly too, is these, looks like these, and again, we've seen each different plat, each different lot, are they not, looks like they're next door to each other.
They're
any
confused.
Reason why we can't tell them to have one and they get a share?
Well, there is, I don't know if you can see in your picture, but there is a pretty good sized drainage right here.
Yeah.
So
where was this one coming off the other road right here anyhow? So when it was going to come off on the other side of the drainage?
I think they were accessing from up here.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So there's
he
nothing here.
Sorry. No, it's okay. He showed us the map when mm-hmm. he was here. I'm trying to remember what he said they were accessing but, from.
So just kind of back up just a little bit to bring everybody up to speed, and namely me and maybe.
I think they're accessing from here.
So right now they're accessing
they're actually
off
like
the
this.
Private road.
Off the private road, yes. Right now there is nothing from County Road 18. And but in their letter, they are asking, they are proposing that they will do a 20-foot long, 18-inch wide, 18-inch diameter culvert.
So off, they, which, off of 18?
Off of 18, yeah.
For each one of the...
Each one.
One. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. again, my, I guess my question is any reason, so any reason why we could just tell them that they need to get one and then share it? Is this a fence between here, or is this not even nothing? Do we know?
There's no... fence that I can't remember, but what this drainage right here?
Yeah,
it's a pretty good size. I mean, I guess they could put another culvert over.
But this slot right here with that drainage, he's going to come off right there. Mm-hmm. Why can't we just come off basically right here on this side of the drainage? That's what they're proposing right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're proposing that they have one of them and they share it and they go over here.
Yes, I mean, we can definitely.
I mean, I understand you guys' perspective, and that's our perspective, too. Anytime we got a cut in the road, it's that much pain, you know, so we want to minimize.
And honestly, that's not a bad idea, because this location that they're asking, the crest of the hill is like right here. So it's actually a pretty bad location for this access, which we would have to ask them to move it farther down.
Which then gets into that little creek.
Yeah. So we could ask them to we'll allow one and then
they work out between the two property owners with the temporary access easement across for ag easement is across mm-hmm. that this property here over to that property. I mean
that's we
they're
can
asking
definitely
us to waive our rules and the mm-hmm. rest. You know, and again, I support the ag access. We want to continue having agriculture out here, and we want to continue having the ag use of the property. But, you know, I, and again, we're all sitting out here making rules because they don't want to drive flatbed trailer and my hay and baler and tractor through their $4 million ranch. So, ranchette.
Right.
So,
I think that is definitely an option that we can propose for them to share. You know, and then have them draft a
we could
an
do that and then see what they think after that. I don't see what you think.
Yeah, I mean that's fine, but I don't. I guess the questions I had more were about process. I'm not so concerned. I think if we could do just one instead of two, and we had some discussion about why we would be theoretically supportive of this. I mean, my understanding was it's not year round. It's really only. For the purpose
hay
of
season.
The agriculture mm-hmm. operations during hay season. So it makes sense to me. But my questions were probably more for Eric, honestly, of just what's the actual process here? I mean, if this is in our regulations and we're somehow making some kind of, I don't know what the appropriate mechanism is for this kind of a...
It's not typical
right.
to avoid regulation. Or even supplying a waiver. By the same token, we have rules about doing work in the right of way. It's prohibited. However, we do provide exceptions to that by way of a revocable license agreement to do or a permit to do work in the right of way. This one's a little odder because we don't have a process set up prior to the requests.
Right.
And that's always problematic, going back in time to take a, you know, a hindsighted view mm-hmm. of a request and then undo a regulation to meet the demand. So I missed a portion of this, so I'm sorry. My understanding was that the request was not too limited to seasonal access, that they wanted it year-round.
Well, they're calling it agricultural access.
Yeah. So one option, if you're inclined to allow it, would be to restrict it to a seasonal.
Which we would want to, yes.
I think so.
I would concur.
I mean, they're calling it agricultural access, so I don't know what they would need agricultural access for in the middle of the winter.
In the winter
right?
You know, if they had cows out there, so that would...
Okay, yeah. I see.
My impression of it, again, I got this sort of third hand was that if it wasn't going to be year-round, then it was sort of pointless anyway.
Oh.
But if it truly is for an agricultural purpose, for hay and whatnot, it only makes sense to do it seasonally. The other thing that I would suggest is if the commission were inclined to allow this, is to require a license agreement of some sort that I can assist in the drafting of, simply because when you allow something, it's very difficult to take it away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At times. But if you draw some parameters about it around it with a written agreement, that would be my very strong recommendation.
So doing it in, like, I assume you refer to the right-of-way work first, because it would be a similar type of agreement, like a revocable license?
Yes. Revocable on the side of the county.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know what potential this road has. What if we wanted to apply for CDOT grants? I don't know, that required, some sort of compliance feature where we needed to take away the access. I'm just guessing here and making stuff up,
right.
But we need to have the ability to say, we allowed this for a period of time, but now we need to...
For a specific purpose, and yeah.
Or for safety concerns generally.
Right. Yeah.
No, I think you're right, but the other thing is we don't want the next thing, you could turn around down the road here, well, we don't want a secondary unit. And then we have the access in the secondary unit by this road, because they didn't want to have the secondary unit people go through their driveway.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess how's the best process for us to move along? I guess maybe we provide staff some more direction here and mm-hmm. what we're going to be amenable to, and then we tell Road and Bridge and our legal team to come up with that. That way we don't approve it twice.
What that license agreement looks like.
So, yeah, you guys could work up and draft up an agreement. I guess, and again, I'll go back, defer back to you, too. So I'm fine with a temporary or a seasonal access and one of them. That was all one field at one point in time. I'm mm-hmm. Carrie. I don't care just because they split it up to make 2 5-acre pieces. So
mm-hmm.
they can share their access and share and work out a deal amongst themselves for a common easement across each other's property. So I would suggest that we work into a shared approval of a shared access, seasonal, and that we work up the
revocable
license agreement.
I'm okay with that. I don't, and I think we want to say that it's for this specific purpose, because that's why we're supportive of it, is the continuation of the ag activities. And mm-hmm. so if they want to use the access for some other purpose, that would not be permitted. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's preferable to saying seasonal or if we want to say both.
Both.
Both. Okay.
We address Doug's concern about the secondary units.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm supportive of that. I think we can give direction to mm-hmm. you all, with Eric, to
can definitely draft that
work on that. Obviously communicate to the property owner about that we would prefer one access and that mm-hmm. that's what we are willing to grant to them. I don't know if there's anything else we need to
only to your
today.
Point, I think this would need to come back to you one more time for signature of the agreement. Our license agreements typically
I think start. Doug's point is maybe we don't vote on anything today. We're just giving direction to staff and then we'll take a vote on the agreement.
I knew we were going to have. That's why I didn't want to make a motion today or whatever
mm-hmm.
to provide direction to you, and that could be incorporated into the license agreement that which we would have to approve. Yes, I agree with you.
And from a practical viewpoint, the construction of this, it probably wouldn't be done until next year, because we start limiting.
Yeah, we start limiting on November 1st.
They're already done.
That was my other point. I don't think it should affect them for this year, and especially if we're going to limit it to seasonal, basically hay.
Well, based on what he told us, it was for the purpose of hay.
Yeah. And then, like you said, hay is pretty much done right now.
Right.
And so.
Yeah. And I agree with you. We don't want to allow them to use that for any other use that won't be ag. So I think the revocable license agreement is a great idea.
One big thing is we don't want them being plowing the road out there on that seasonal use and mm-hmm. having another snowbank on the side of the road.
Right.
There.
Or do we want him complaining that we plowed him in?
Any other direction you need or anything else you need, Eric?
I think that's it. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Julie?
This
isn't it, is it? No. Hi. Kevin's not attending with you today?
No, he got tied up.
I don't think
that's a London conference as well.
Okay, thanks.
But I think these are pretty,
it's pretty straightforward.
Straightforward.
Yeah.
So I'm here to request the Board of County Commissioners approve the award for the Yampa Valley Regional Airport HVAC replacement to JDW Incorporated and authorize the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order in the amount of $21,675. This was budgeted at $15,000 because originally they thought they could keep part of the equipment, but it was definitely recommended that we replace all of it at this time. So it probably will need a supplemental budget, but that may be worked out before the year end. So, and we did send this out to 12 vendors, and we posted it on our website and advertised it, and JDW was our sole response. So this was an IFB also, so we would have taken the low bidder on this.
So my only question is that I read the proposal and it said bonding is not included in the proposal. Is bonding not required for this?
Bonding is not required for this. $50,000 and above.
Okay, thank you. That was the only question I had. Do you have any questions, Doug?
No.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve and award the HVAC replacement to JDW Incorporated for the Yampa Valley Regional Airport and authorize the county manager or staff to electronically sign the purchase order in the amount of $21,675.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
And then I am here for consideration of the Board of County Commissioners to waive the formal purchasing process and approve the award and authorization of the county manager to sign to electronically sign a purchase order for one new 2019 S770 T4 Bobcat skid steer loader and two Bobcat 5600s with the trade-in of one 2018 Bobcat, one 2017 Toolcat, and one 2018 Toolcat for Yampa Valley Regional Airport utilizing Bobcat's municipal rollover program to Severson Supply in the amount of $23,858. So this is a program that Kevin found in 2017 and is going to continue utilizing, where we are basically leasing the equipment, and this equipment gets a lot of hard work. So it's a great program for us because they're delicate machines that we really don't know how to fix that well on our own, and so if anything happens, they just replace it and they deliver it right to YVRA to keep the operations running smoothly. The budget, Kevin has decided to continue to keep a placeholder in case he decides to go back to purchasing. That's why the budget amount of $195,000 looks so high when we're really only expending $23,000. And I put all the breakdown of, we had held back on trading in the 2017 and used it for an additional year because the trade-in values were pretty low last year. And this year they've come up considerably, so we feel like we're getting a very good deal.
And they'll allow you to do that?
Yeah.
To push it back here?
Yep.
Seems like it makes sense. And so this is outside our purchasing policy.
We don't need to do an RFP. There's only one company. This Toolcat program is other John Deere's looking at it, but they're not even close to what's going on here. So it is the best value for the county, so that's why we're definitely waiving the purchasing process.
So we're rolling three of them. We're rolling the we're releasing three of them. Last year we didn't lease the one of them because we didn't need to. Is that right?
Well, and also the trade-in value was very low.
So we're trading them in.
We're trading.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Okay. Yeah. In essence, it's a lease.
So we used it again. Yeah, it's a lease.
Because we used it for another, yeah.
So trading we used it for an additional year until the trade-in value came up. That was Kevin's decision last year.
But the price probably on the new one probably went up too.
Probably just a little.
I wouldn't think so.
With the way things are going right now.
Yeah.
But yes, we're getting 3 new machines.
So back to Beth's question. So we're not waiving the formal purchasing process. Is that right? Or we are?
I think we are because we didn't do an RFP for this.
But we didn't do the ISB.
We did an IFB for the last project that we just discussed, the HVAC.
Oh, okay.
So we did an RFP in 2017.
So we're waiving it because this is the only program in existence that does what we do.
And exactly.
We would be trading in these Bobcats to somebody else that doesn't have Bobcats, and they would be a lot lesser price.
Yeah, and we would not be where we are today with this program. And I think that they're going to continue. They're going to look at how they budget this next year a little closer, but... yeah, this program is working very well for them.
We've been, even before Kevin, Dave was doing these too. So that's a good deal. Are you ready?
Yep, I am.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the award and authorization of the county manager's office to sign a purchase order for 1 new 2019 S770 T4 Bobcat skid steer loader and 2 Bobcat 5600s. With the trade-in of with the trade-in of the 3 associated other vehicles, and the total purchase amount is the total $23,858. And again, we're waiving the formal bid process because this is the only program that allowed for that.
Second, any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
You
very
too.
Good. Thank you.
All right, come on up, Doug.
You guys know Molly?
Yeah, hi Molly.
Molly.
Nice to see you.
You
so
too.
The first thing I'll go over is the contract that we have with, or we'd like to have signed between the county and Molly for professional services for the peer support team. So she can get out of here.
For the what?
For the peer support team.
So the contract wasn't included in our packet, so we'll need some information
and
about
that's
that.
What I wasn't yeah. sure. So the contract, she has a contract with the city. This one's similar. I sent it to Eric. Eric made some revisions to it and then signed off on it. Do you guys want to go over it? Or
so what's it for?
Or?
No, I don't know.
So this
yeah, just
is
tell us what it's
just
for.
Just an agreement regarding the actual services that Molly will provide as our clinical support specialist for the Sheriff's Office participation in the peer support program.
Which is for staff, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
a peer support program both in the county and the city for our first responders, and it's all volunteer. However, the requirement is that there's a clinical advisor piece if there's a peer-to-peer interaction across between our folks in uniform that needs to then have clinical advisement or support. I am contracted to provide those services to support the volunteers around their peer support interactions.
And who's the contract with then?
With between the county and Molly.
As an individual?
Individual contractor.
Yes.
Through the peer support team.
Which is a corporation, a 501c3, or is...
No, I'm just a private individual contractor.
Okay.
Providing professional
that's
services.
That's what I meant. Yep.
Yeah.
That's fine.
And this is funded through the Sheriff's Office budget?
This is funded through the grant that I received last year for the Peace Officers Mental Health Grant.
Okay. And is that grant continuing for?
The grant, the funding we have available right now is good through, I believe, June of this year.
Mm-hmm.
So we requested the money to pay Molly services for a year. And I think it took effect in March or April. So we have funding currently in the grant to pay for her services up until then. But then we also requested an extra $15,000 for 2 different trainings. We've actually come way under budget on those 2 trainings, so there we'll be able to use some of that funding as well, all the way up till June, I think. And I haven't seen where they've opened it up to reapply for it, but we have no concerns about getting it again.
Got it.
And then another piece to this is we also have... a line item for professional services that for some reason if this grant were to go away and we didn't have the grant money to fund Molly services, we could look at using some professional services or increasing that professional services line item mm-hmm. to continue our work with her.
So where's it coming out of now, even if
it's coming from the grant?
I understand that, but we still have to come out of one of your expenditure line items.
To get reimbursed by the grant?
No, just to show the expenditure. Strunat, our accountant downstairs.
Yes.
So when you have a line item for the revenues coming in and a line item, so it must still be coming out of your professional services.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Got it.
So what we're at, you're saying then, is there's a potential that we might need to not have the revenue come in, we'd still have the need to have the professional services be done.
That is a possibility in the future.
How's the program working out?
You know, I obviously...
He shouldn't even know because it's all on the peer level and not on an administration level. So it is being highly utilized by certain departments, some more than others, and yet at the same time making sure that we have a debriefing available when there is a critical incident. That's part of it, which we have had at least two since the inception through the sheriff's office that involved the sheriff's office in the county since the beginning of this. And then we have peer-to-peer encounters that happen fairly regularly. We have 25 responders trained in the peer support program, so that's our team. They go then to their own departments, and they're there as a supportive individual within their department, and that's including dispatch, sheriff, police, all of our volunteers, search and rescue, North Route, South Route, West Route, and fire and rescue. So we have 25 folks who are trained in peer support, which is funding that for the training that Doug secured. But we probably are having probably 4 to 5 peer interactions a month. But then if needed, I will support if there's any sort of suicidal expression or any sort of we need a further involvement on a clinical level. I go in and support on that. And that's probably one out of every 4 or 5 interactions that they kind of ask me, like, what do I do with this information that I just learned? But it's all confidential. I never know. Doug certainly doesn't know.
Unless it gets to a certain point where there is some type of serious intervention that needs to be
duty to report. Yeah.
The only thing I can comment on as far as successes in the program are the 2 debriefs that Molly mentioned, and they were outstanding on the 2 critical incidents that we had.
And are you paid on a, like, as-needed basis, or it's more of a flat fee?
$200 a month.
Okay.
It's
just a flat fee.
Is that right?
That's right.
All right.
And that covers everything, so it doesn't matter if I'm busy that month or not.
So do you do the training for these other peers, that
mm-hmm.
you train them
mm-hmm.
to do the interaction?
Yes. We've done one training, and we're going to do another in December. So we're training our team based on a training protocol for peer support. This is a nationwide recognized program. Peer support that started in law enforcement that reduces suicide, death by suicide among our first responders, and it encourages them to use each other as collaborative and supportive members, rather than, we know this isn't a group of folks who typically access mental health support, so being able to equip them with being able to just be an ear, a listening ear, know what their resources are in the community, but also understand and recognize if somebody is expressing some suicidal intention, what to do with that.
And it's not just suicide, it could be substance abuse.
Yeah.
Marriage issues.
Family issues.
I don't have any other questions.
I guess one other question, Doug. So on the title of the agenda packet, it said a supplemental budget.
That's separate.
Oh.
So we're on item B.
Okay.
Yeah.
They both came through on the same. Okay. They both came through on the same agenda item form. Okay.
I've got that one next.
No, that's fine. So...
And I have to be somewhere right now, so if you want to look at that and then give it back to Doug, and I'll sign it. I'll go over to the county and sign it after he receives it.
She
back
can sign
from
it
you,
right
or?
Now.
Well, I have to sign it, but the clerk has to sign it
okay.
as well. So, and actually, there's no signature line for you on this one, so I don't
there
know.
Right, it's right there.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yes.
So okay. It's hidden. We had to look too. So,
Madam Chair, I move we approve the contract between Route County and Molly Lotz for the. Clinical support services for the Route County Sheriff's Office Peer Support Program.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Molly.
All right. Take care.
All right. So then we'll take a look at this supplemental budget request.
Yep. So I'm not sure if it specifies in there, but I'm actually not asking for more money. I'm just asking to spend money that's above the $1,000 limit from our current armory line items on some items for the armory.
Right. Yeah, I read it earlier. So
okay.
The night vision
So I read it, but I don't really understand why this requires a supplemental budget. Can anyone explain this?
Because
to me?
they're
controllable items
over $1,000.
Okay. Got it. That makes sense.
So really, they had the budgetary authority based on their overall budget, but
right.
we didn't have it in the.
It's not controllables.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was the other issue. You know, they're not going to be listed as controllable items under a replacement schedule because they're not items like radios or something that have a 5-year lifespan.
Yeah.
They could last 20, you know, the last night vision stuff that Asset purchased was back in 1999, and it's still utilized by Asset today. So it's not like something that we want to have under a regular replacement schedule.
Mm-hmm. I'm not questioning you on this. I'm just curious, what's the need for this specific item?
Night vision? The need or the want?
It's a little of both. I mean, that's sort of my question,
you know,
I guess.
I'll be honest. It's something we've always wanted.
Yeah.
When you're looking for suspects and stuff at night, you know, a couple of years ago we got a grant to purchase a thermal imaging device. There's been several instances where we've been looking for people in the dark, and that enhances our ability to see at night as opposed to walking around with a flashlight,
yeah.
Exposing your position. There was just an article in Police One 2 weeks ago, and I was actually going to print that off just for this specific question, and I didn't, where some officers responded to a domestic violence incident. One of them had a night vision scope on his rifle, and as they were approaching the residence, just happened to see a suspect crouching in the bushes with a rifle waiting to ambush him. With a naked eye or with flashlight shining around, you might not have seen something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's to enhance the officer's ability to detect people in the dark and at night. It's something, again, that we've wanted, but it wasn't something that we felt justified to actually put in the budget to buy these. I would like to have every shift supervisor to at least have some type of capability. So every single shift has one of these. Right now we have the one device that they have to trade off through every shift if they're able to meet up. So that was the reason. I've received a lot of post reimbursement money for ammo this year, which is why we still have a pretty healthy armory line item right now.
Got it. And where does the armory funding come from? Just generally, is it out of the general fund?
Budget is the general fund budget.
Okay, so it must be outside.
So from the state, so is it coming from the state grant,
yeah,
or is it coming from the feds? Or I think that's what she's asking.
It's so not general fund money, though. Is that what you're saying, Doug? You don't think it is? Sorry, this Doug.
I think we're talking about two different things. You're talking about the grant money that I've received this year?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's post-grant money that I've received to purchase ammo this year. Our armory budget usually covers our purchase of training ammo and other armory items for the year.
And that's part of the general, from the general fund?
Yes, the armory budget that the sheriff has comes out of the general fund, and they've gotten this other money in lieu of, and so it makes this other money available, correct?
Got it.
Correct.
Okay, now I understand. Thank you.
So I guess my question here, so 4 sets of night vision monoculars with PIQ, so you said you had a $20,000 budget, and so you still have $19,000 left, so is this 4 sets going to use up to $19,000? Just curious. Not that it matters any on the supplemental budget. But
it depends on the most expensive one I have found so far is about $2,800 a piece.
Uh-huh.
I have spoken with a couple other vendors that think they can get them for cheaper.
So either way, it wouldn't use the full $19,000.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
No. And if I could get them for cheaper and get 5 instead of 4, then
yeah,
that's an option too. And then, the PEQ illuminators are actually targeting devices. So these are mounted on rifles.
And
the PEQ targeting devices are infrared, like a laser pointer that you can only see through the night vision. So if you're looking for somebody in the dark, they don't see you targeting them.
Are you ready?
I am.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve a supplemental budget with the Sheriff's Office regarding the armory line and approve that supplemental budget in the
approve the signature of two of the commissioners on that supplemental budget.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thanks, Doug.
Now, as far as this, I need to take this down ahead.
Well, I just see that...
Even that, you know, before you turn on, yeah. Being a Tabor election or not, I mean, you could win the election and nobody would really know till they took it to court. And the courts decide. I mean, if you lose, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you could be on the losing side and lose and the thing win. And
that's a good point. And then someone says it had to have been a Tabor election. So
yep.
It's,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyhow, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
Okay.
Right. Go ahead, Kathy.
Since Kim's here, I am going to start with the chief deputy clerk position. Kim is requesting your consideration to approve hiring the chief deputy clerk at step 5 of the pay scale. It is an admin 7 pay scale that we would be following. And this individual who would be filling this position, it's already an existing position that's already budgeted. Jenny Thomas is the person who Kim would like to appoint into this role, and she meets all the education and work experience requirements to advance to step 5. She has an Associate of Applied Science in Communication and Mass Media, is a certified Help American Vote Act Colorado election official, and a Colorado notary. In addition, she has over 15 years of relevant experience, 11 years above the minimum requirement in the job description. She's also been working for Route County for a number of years now. The county manager has reviewed this request and recommended it be placed on the agenda for your consideration for approval.
I just have a question about our policy. If you have an internal hire, why don't they just get to keep the step they're already at? Why does they have to be reconsidered
That's
for a different...
That's not how we've ever
It's
done.
Just not the way the policy
well,
is written.
Well, because typically...
It's a new job, too.
Yeah, so typically if they're in a new role, they wouldn't have the... Sometimes they can go back to step 1 because it's really they're at the entry level as far as their work experience goes.
Job.
So we do it two ways. If it's a promotion, they could potentially get 5%.
Mm-hmm.
They'd get into the step that's 5% above their existing salary, or we look at their credentials and compare them to the minimum requirements, and we go through this process.
So I don't think any of that stuff's written down. That's kind of what we've been championing Tom to
write
to
that
write
stuff
it down. That's been the practice, exactly what Kathy just said.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's how we've kind of been doing it. So were we asking for a six-month review on this one here? The next one has a six-month review.
The next one has a six-month review. This one is
step 5.
Yep, that's correct.
And that would be effective yesterday, hiring date of that new job?
Correct.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the hiring of the Chief Deputy Clerk at step 5 of the pay scale, effective 9/16/2019.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks,
Kim.
Very good.
Have you
Thank
done
you.
A change of status?
I will do that.
Okay. Great. Perfect.
Oh, actually, I have.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You're good to go then.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
okay,
you.
Okay. Next is a request to hire a human resources coordinator at step 5 with the opportunity to advance to step 6 upon successful completion of a 6-month performance evaluation. This position is already in existence and is already budgeted. This is a request to hire Holly Estes at step 5, and she does meet all the education and work experience to be hired at step 5 with the option to advance to step 6. She has a high school diploma, 1 year of college, and 12 years of relevant office experience, 2 years above the minimum requirement. The county manager has reviewed this request and recommended it be placed on the agenda for your consideration and approval.
I don't have any questions.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the hiring of the human resources coordinator at step 5 of the pay scale and approve the advancement to step 6 based on a successful 6-month performance evaluation.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just have a good day.
Hey, we're going to have some more.
I don't know who is talking here, but
I'm talking. Carrie's here for moral support.
All right.
Sounds good.
Let me start out with the background information. This request that we're making is for a mobile radio for the new Rock County Sheriff's Office transport vehicle. The radio that's in that vehicle was that's being replaced was manufactured in the late 1990s and was purchased used in 2006. That particular radio was overlooked through our normal replacement cycle because it was entered with a 20-year life cycle from when it was purchased, not from its original life or year of manufacture. So that model radio has not been in production in at least 10 years. It's been replaced by newer supported models. When the state of Colorado performs updates to the DTR network later, next week, actually, this radio will no longer function on the network.
Did you say next week?
Next week, yes.
Okay. So next week, the current equipment will no longer function.
Right. And we have one spare mobile radio right now in our fleet, in our IGA that we just talked about earlier in a work session. Says that we're supposed to have one radio. It's currently in the airport director's vehicle, so we don't really have one to put in this vehicle at all. It's part of the reason why we're asking for another one. So we're asking for consideration for the board to approve the state bid purchase and authorize the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order to Motorola Solutions for the purchase of one APX8500 mobile dual-band radio in the amount of $5,499.99 to be installed in the new detention transport vehicle for the Rock County Sheriff's Department.
Is this the prisoner transport?
It is.
Vehicle?
Okay. Yes.
And the original budget was assuming that you were going to be able to take the radio out of the old one? Or
I think
it's just a totally separate budget item?
It's a totally separate. We didn't.
It's not included in there.
And it's not included in the vehicle.
It wasn't on our. Yeah, it wasn't in our list of replacements for this year. So when we're reviewing the plethora of radios that we're keeping track of, it was out several years in the future. And then we came up. The sheriff said, "Hey, we need to replace that radio." We looked at the model and realized it should have been adjusted properly in the replacement life cycle instead of.
Is this vehicle going to be here this year?
I don't know what the status is, actually.
Okay.
Maybe.
But it may take a month or two to get the radio.
It's probably going to take a month or two for us to get the radio for it, yes.
Gotcha.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the state bid purchase and authorize the county manager's office to electronically sign the purchase order to Motorola Solutions Incorporated for the purchase of one APX8500 mobile dual band radio in the amount of $5,499.99, which will be installed in the Rock County Sheriff's Department transport vehicle, also authorizing to the commissioners to sign the supplemental budget.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thanks.
Governance
at 3:25, and then we have executive session at 3:40.
Okay.
So I think we're all right.
So what did you say again? So we have the governance as
governance at 3:25, and then executive session at 3:40.
Okay. I turned this off.
The TV?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're done with it, right?
Well, we were going to watch TV for a bit.
Well,
I know. Turn it back on.
Rocky's a player. Those legal, they're afraid somebody might be watching them.
Yeah,
reverse
it's
TV.
True. Well, that would be on the computer, so
it's just as bright.
Tried snowing on there, looks like out there for a bit.
This is an item that was previously scheduled on several occasions for board review and contemplation and amendments. So this is not a new policy regarding governance, but it's a replacement policy of an older policy regarding governance principles and the relationship between board members and the board and the county manager. Several iterations, and we've landed on a final copy. All of the changes that the board had asked for were made with few exceptions. We've discussed those exceptions, which were essentially recommendations on my part, to either change the language again. We've discussed that at work session, and here we are for final review and passage. You have, should have a resolution, which I'm placing before you. The only item I wanted to talk about where this was concerned is there was an option on the resolution to allow the policy to be revised to reflect policy number once that number is assigned, and without the need to further come back to you for passage of that. So this resolution is designed to allow that.
Okay, that's fine.
Because you're planning on adopting kind of a numbering system as part of your policy updates. Is that
correct?
Right?
Yes, okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
So really what's in front of you today is this resolution, which would adopt this as formal policy applicable to the Board of County Commissioners and the County Manager, and all with all the changes are already made, and that once that numbering system is established, we can go ahead and add that number to this policy without further approval. Resolution number 2019-055.
Sounds good to me.
Are you good?
Yeah, we've had plenty of discussion on this, so I think we're, yeah.
It's bled all over. So, Madam Chair, I move we approve Resolution 2019-055, a resolution adopting the Board of County Commissioners Governing Principles Policy of Rob County, Colorado.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Don't turn that off yet. I, acting as chair, move that the Board of County Commissioners go into executive session to discuss Johnson Ranch and Route County Road 59. This executive session will not be electronically recorded, as the county attorney has advised that the discussion is subject to attorney-client privilege. This is an executive session for the following purpose: a conference with the county attorney for the purpose of receiving legal advice on specific legal questions under CRS Section 24-6-402-4B. I caution each participant to confine all discussion to the stated purpose of the executive session, and that no formal action may occur in the executive session. If at any point in the executive session any participant believes the discussion is going outside the proper scope of the executive session, please interrupt the discussion and make an objection. It is September 17th, 2019, and the time is 3:40 p.m.
Can I add?
Second.
Other discussion?
This is an item regarding Johnson Ranch and Route County Road 59, which I will be providing legal advice to this board.
And I guess we will report out after the, for either action or non-action.
Yes, sir.
After we come out.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Or the part where I talk about us coming out of executive session, and then we're
going to... Yeah.
The time is now 4:32 p.m. and the executive session has been concluded. The following persons were present at this executive session. I'll have each person just state their name. Beth Melton.
Doug Munger.
Dan Weinheimer.
Linnea South, Assistant County Attorney.
Alan Goldich.
Eric Knaus.
Chad Phillips.
The board limited its discussion to the purpose stated in the motion to go into executive session, and no formal action was taken. Okay, I think we're prepared to give some direction to staff as a result of our conversation, and Eric, you said you would help us with doing that.
All right, so we discussed several options in dealing with the situation before us at Johnson Ranch, wherein a dozen or so parcels were divided from a larger mother parcel into something, parcels less than 35 acres. If the county road right-of-way for County Road 59 was not used in calculating the total acreage of the adjacent parcels. So the problem is that essentially there was an illegal subdivision pursuant to our current regulations, and that some of the resultant infant parcels were less than 35 acres, again, only if the acreage of the adjacent right-of-way was not used in calculating that acreage. So the question before the board and discussion that we've had now in executive session was a potential solutions or no solution in regards to this problem. After weighing the various options, I believe the board is prepared to give direction concerning how to deal with this from a planning perspective, and that would be to require a subdivision exemption plat of these parcels, and only if and after an exhaustion of a possible lot line adjustment as a remedy to the problem itself. The planning department may rely on a professional opinion that the lot line adjustment is not an adequate remedy to solve the problem, and therefore pursue then a subdivision exemption plat for these parcels.
Yes, that reflects the conversation that we had. Do you think that a motion is required?
No.
Okay. So?
I'm all good.
And then did you want to include anything about signing off on the building permit?
Yes. That would be per our normal process, which would be after the subdivision exemption.
Plat has been recorded.
Yep.
All right.
Thank you very much.
I'm a little heartburned on that one because that probably kicks it down the road.
So next year.
If it's significant concern, we'll bring this back.
We could bring it back. That would be good.
That's
appreciate
fine.
That.
Yep.
Thank you very much for your time. And the time is
4:35 p.m. We're adjourned.
4:32.
Yeah, 4:32 was the conclusion of the executive session.